Okay, so this week we are going to be learning in Parshat Bahar and Bechukotai, or Parshiot Bahar and Bechukotai. We have two Parshiot. And the truth is, as far as I can tell, they're actually thematically connected. They're ideas which go back and forth and really take them or fuse them to a great extent together. And we're going to see some of that. And let's just start. Enough of an introduction, let's just start reading as well. V'deber Hashem el Moshe b'har Sinai l'mor, deber b'nei Yisrael v'mar t'lehem ki tavo la'aretz. So already this is going to be, there's two things which we've known right away. One is, as opposed to what we've become accustomed to in Sefer Vayikra, which starts off by God saying, God speaks to Moshe, and where is he speaking to him? He's speaking to him in the Mishkan, which means, you know, that's that verse that we had seen, that the sound of God will come out between the two Keruvim. So over here, God is speaking, it says, Bahar Sinai, which is interesting, and some of the commentaries pick up on that. Of course, Rashi takes it in his direction, Manyan Shmita El Har Sinai, but also take a look at the Ibn Ezra. He gives a completely different approach, which I'm not going to cite. Daber Ben Yisrael v'amarta lehem, ki tavo la'aretz asher ani noten lachem, v'shavta aretz shabbat la'shem. So over here, it just now introduces something which is being called a Shabbat. But it's not the regular Shabbat, V'shavta ha'aretz Shabbat Hashem, just in case we're really intrigued to know what this means. It continues and it says, Sheish shemin tuzra sadecha, v'sheish shanim tuzmar karmecha, v'savta tvota, v'shana shvi'it, Shabbat Shabbaton yeh la'aretz Shabbat la'Hashem. Sadcha lo tizra v'karmecha lo tizmar. Now, sometimes when I learn, I read things in a funny way, and I want to explain to you what it is that I do. Sometimes instead of like reading things really carefully and being medayek in every single letter and every single word and so on, sometimes when I'm reading, I try to catch the tune, the flow, the almost, I don't want to say the poetry, but it's the sound. It's the sound of the words. And it's an impression, which means what does this sound, what does it sound like? So when I do this over here, it's very simple what it sounds like. It sounds like 6 days you work and then on the seventh you rest. And what I'm saying right now is very obvious, but if we needed to get some kind of impression about what these verses are reminiscent of, so the answer, of course, is Shabbat. And the most obvious part of it is that it actually uses the same words. Now, this is not the only place that Shabbat is used. It's not the only place that the term is used. But there's something else which is interesting over here about the usage. And again, let's take a look. Is it called it Shabbat Shabbaton? Well, maybe that's not fair. V'shana shvi'it Shabbat, Shabbaton yeh la'aretz. So again, obviously, reading it with the trop, although with the trop it comes out a little different. I can ask Michael to read it, who's an excellent Balkore, and if I read it, then he's going to... Yeah, 1 second. We're going to get Michael involved in this. But the Shabbat Shabbaton does go together.
Yes,
it's absolutely. Even though I would read it, V'shana shvi'it Shabbat, Shabbaton yeh la'aretz, but that's not the trop. The trop is uvishana hashvi'i, Shabbat Shabbaton yeh la'aretz Shabbat la'Hashem. So it's interesting that it does put those two words together, Shabbat Shabbaton. So, right, pasuk dalet uvishana hashvi'i, uvishana hashvi'it, Shabbat Shabbaton yeh la'aretz Shabbat la'Hashem. Which, by the way, is just a little bit awkward in how you read it. But the other thing that I want you to think about is, again, the tzlil, the sound. Shabbat Shabbaton, are we familiar with that terminology? Does it come any other place? And maybe even more importantly, what does it mean, Shabbat Shabbaton? But so hold on to that, and I'm going to return to it. So the impression that we're getting is somehow, okay, firstly, Har Sinai. Secondly, when you come to the land, this is land-based, which means there's a whole bunch of commandments that we're familiar with which are not land-based necessarily. They're Torah-based. They apply anywhere, any place that we happen to be. This is a land-based law, so we also perhaps need to pay attention to which kinds of things are land-based and which kinds of things are not necessarily land-based. To continue, this phrase as well, Again, it uses the phrase again, Shanat Shabbaton Yela Aretz. Again, Vayta Shabbat Aretz Lachem LaOchla Lacha Ulabdecha Ulamamatecha Ulischercha Ulotoshevcha Hagarim Imach Ulohem Techa Ulachaya Shabartecha. Again, that the sound of it reminds us of the Shabbat. But then we get to a new sound, and it's this new sound that I want you to pay attention to, because so far the point of reference has clearly been Shabbat. But now it gives us a new reference. Usfarta lecha sheva shabbatot shanim, sheva shanim, sheva pamim, v'yalecha yimei sheva shabbatot shanim, teisha v'arba'im shana. So when we pause there, that sound should have reminded us of something else. And again, I just have to assume that all of you know exactly what I'm referring to, and that is, of course, the Omer. Because as opposed to 6 days you work, 6 years you work, the seventh day you rest, the seventh year you rest, not just you, the people that live with you, not just you, the animals, and so on. But now it gave it, and you'll count, 7 years, and seven times 7 years, you'll get to 49, of course, then leading to the 50th. We just had that last week, and that was somewhat unique. And incidentally, how did that section begin? It began with Ki Tavo El Haaretz. This was, again, a land-based law. Shabbat is any place in the world. But the Omer, actually bringing the Omer, that, of course, is going to be land-based. So we have an interesting reference. Now, I want to say something else, which is very obvious to me. I don't know if I ever saw anybody say it, but it's very obvious to me. The 50th day also represents a type of a Shabbat Shabbaton, because it is the Shabbat after Sheva Shabbatot. So therefore, 7 times 7, the 49, is also a type of a Shabbat Shabbaton, and that's why it's a bit intriguing to me, this idea of you're going to count 7 times 7, 49, and then, of course, leading to the 50. So we have actually two things which now are in the background, again, in terms of just references. One is clearly Shabbat, but it was Ki Tavo El Haaretz, and that's the Omer, and it's the other is the 7 times 7, 49, and that is, again, the Omer. So let's just see where else this then will take us. Going again back to the source, it then tells us a second thing, and this is Pasuk Tet, and this is a whole nother place. Varvarta shofar, right, when you get to the end of the 49th year, you get to the 50th, varvarta shofar. Now right there, you have to stop. Varvarta shofar truah. B'chodesh ha-shvi'i basur l'chodesh b'yom ha-kippurim taviru shofar b'kol artzachem. So that was a whole mouthful, but now we have a whole new reference point, and the reference point is the shofar. It's the truah, and it's in the seventh month. And if I would have stopped there, the first half of that verse, Vavarta shofar truah b'chodesh ha-shvi'i, and I don't look what it says next, I would have assumed that it had to be Rosh Hashanah. And it's very obvious it has to be Rosh Hashanah. Of course it has to be Rosh Hashanah. What's the easiest reason it has to be Rosh Hashanah? There are two easy reasons. Straightforward, simple, non-negotiable. You can't debate it. One is, we said you're going to count 49 years, the 50th year. When does the 50th year begin? Rosh Hashanah of the 50th year. So of course it's Rosh Hashanah. Second point, which should be obvious, it says, oh, you're going to blow the shofar, the truah, the shofar and the truah. So what day do we blow the shofar? Answer, Rosh Hashanah. So those of you who don't know, we're about to switch, because that's not what the Torah says. The Torah actually says that it is a different date, and that is what is perplexing. Continuing to the end of that verse, b'chodesh ha-shvi'i, okay, we're on the way, the seventh month, be'esor l'chodesh, on the 10th day of the month, b'yom ha-kippurim ta'aviru shofar b'chol artzachem. This thing is going to be done in Yom Kippur, and even if you're used to this verse and you're familiar with the text, and this is like a given for you, you really do have to stop and ask yourself, why is that the case? Why is Yom Kippur the day that we're going to blow the shofar to mark the beginning of the Jubilee year, the Yovel? Why is this not Rosh Hashanah? If we did not know these psukim, it's the obvious date. And once you know that the way you're going to do it is the shofar, it's the obvious date. And this, I hope, is perplexing. You know, sometimes I have surprise endings and you don't know where I'm going. So I'm going to tell you at least part of what I want to do right now. One of the things which I've seen people discuss and debate and try to figure out is the holiday that we have coming up fairly soon is the holiday of Shavuot. Of course, called Shavuot because we're counting 7 weeks. The holiday of Shavuot, if we look last week in Parshat Emor, is completely agricultural. It's the Bikurim. You're going to bring the first fruits. You're going to have the Shtei Lechem, and so on and so forth. But the holiday itself, we're not told about the historical event. Let's stop for a second. All of the three regalim have agricultural significance and have historical significance. And I would say historical / theological. Pesach, obviously, is not just the Omer, it's when we leave Egypt. But Pesach is always described as being in the spring. It's a spring holiday. That already tells you something about agriculture. Sukkot is a fall holiday. It's at the very end of the agricultural year. So Sukkot is connected also, but what does it say about it? It also tells us the historical or theological, because when God took us out of Egypt, then God either protected us with clouds, or depending on whose opinion, or we lived in Sukkot. Either way, there is this historical reference to it. When it comes to and those are in the Torah. Ki b'Sukkot hashavti, that's a pasuk in the Torah. That I took you out of Egypt, that's many, many pasukim in the Torah. But when it comes to the holiday of Shavuot, there is no historical or theological significance which is assigned to it. And that is a little strange, especially since every single one of us knows what the theological significance of this date is, and that is when God gave us the Torah. So therefore, this is really interesting, because Matan Torah took place on this holiday, but the Torah never tells us this. So the fact that Torah never tells us this can do one of two things. One, we could say, no, this is totally based upon Torah Shebal Peh, and that's it, nothing more to discuss. Or you can be cynical and say, well, at which point in history did the Jews change the holiday, which was purely agricultural in its earliest stage, and then turn it in, and then find some religious significance as well? So you heard my cynical voice when I said that, and I hope that you noted that I don't particularly love that approach. If it is correct, which we have no reason to believe it's not, that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola were the ones who formed the prayers, and they're the ones who also were involved in choosing the Haftorah and the Torah reading. It's interesting because the Torah reading on Shavuot is about the Aseret HaDibrot. It's interesting that in the liturgy itself, in the Tefillah, we say Zman Matan Torateinu, by the way, which is also very interesting. There's a very famous Mogen Avraham. You can look it up. The Mogen Avraham, it's in the Laws of Shavuot, and he asks this incredible question. He says, how could it possibly be that on Shavuot we say Yom Matan Torateinu? He says, but if you do the math, it could be, according to the Gemara, that the Torah was actually given on the 50th day, and this is a whole huge problem, because maybe Moshe Rabbeinu added a day, and if Moshe added a day, it wasn't the 49th day, it was the 50th day, or maybe the 51st day, I'm saying, and then we follow opinion of Yossi, you don't need to know what I'm talking about right now. But if that's the case, he says, how can we say Yom Matan Torateinu? And people take his question and say, wow, that's a really good question. And the Mogen Avraham ends up saying that it must be, this is the proof that Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliot in Chutz La'aretz has religious significance, because only on Yom Tov Sheni is the day that we actually receive the Torah, not Yom Tov Rishon. So after the Mogen Avraham goes and gives this wonderful answer, if you actually look inside, it doesn't say Yom Matan Torateinu. It says Zman Matan Torateinu. You know, we prepared for it, Shloshi Yimei Hagbalah. There's days of preparing and so on, which means it never, which his question disappears. And we don't like sometimes when questions just disappear. It wasn't a question. But my point is that Shavuot is connected to the giving of the Torah, either by being that day, the day before, the day after, and all that is not significant. That is what happened in this time period. And that's very easy math. Because we're told that the Jews left Egypt, and we're told what day they leave, and we're told that on the Rosh Chodesh of the third month, they arrive by Sinai. And then if you start counting, there is one day, and a second day, and a third day, and a fourth day, and then we can debate whether there was a fifth or sixth, or only a fifth, or so on, but it's more or less that exact date, which means the holiday of Shavuot, which we only learn about subsequently in Parshat Emor, that we're going to count 7 weeks and 49 days, and the 50th day is right around the same point. So now, let me try all over again what I'm trying to say, because I know nobody understood me. It's okay. So now let me try to explain what it is that I was trying to say. I want you to pay attention now to what I described earlier as the tzlil of the psukim. Shemitah reminds me of the Omer. Why? For the obvious reasons. 7 weeks, 7 weeks, 49, 49, 50th, 50th, obvious connection. But now there's something else which was interesting. And again, let me repeat myself. The term Shabbat Shabbaton was real interesting to me because it's a Shabbat of Shabbats. So now if you think about it, you count 49, 7 weeks. That is, then this is the Shabbat of the Shabbats, as it were. And that's 49 leading into the 50th. So that's also a type of a Shabbat Shabbaton. There's another day which is called Shabbat Shabbaton. Which day is that? Michael, I hear you. Which day is that? Yom Kippur is also called Shabbat Shabbaton. What was the other question which I left hanging? Why is it that the Yovel is specifically, you blow the shofar, I'm going to come back to that in a second, on the 50th year, and specifically on Yom Kippur? Remember I said earlier it should have been Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is where the shofar comes from. That would make so much more sense. The only problem is there's another element over here that we seem to be ignoring, which I think is absolutely the issue, and let's take a look. If we go to source number 4, which is Perek Yud Tet, these are the days that we're preparing, and you know whether the Jews counted 49 or 50 days leading from Egypt to Sinai or not, I cannot tell you. There is such an opinion which the Ran quotes as a Midrash, and I believe the Rambam says it as well, the Mor Nevuchim, but it's not the Pshat in the Torah. But notice something, as we're preparing, what does it say? It says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, B'mshoch ha-yovel he-mi-yalu bahar. They can't go up the whole time, but what's the yovel there? Well, the yovel is actually the blowing of a shofar. As a matter of fact, it says a little furthermore, it says, V'hi b'yom ha-shlish hi b'yota boker, after the days of preparing, then on the third day, kolot brakim v'anan kaved, and notice the anan also, the anan is the cloud, alahar, v'kol shofar chazak ma'od. Again, in Pasuk Yotet, V'yihi kol ha-shofar ha-lech v'chazek ma'od. You go a little bit further afterwards in source number 5, and I'm skipping to Pasuk Tetvav. V'chol ha'am ro'im et ha-kolot v'talvim v'etz kol ha-shofar v'tahar ashen. So what we have then, if you now start to think about it, I was being slightly unfair before when I said, hold it, where in the world do we find the shofar? We find it specifically on the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Well, not so quick. We find the Truah, or the Zechet Truah. But the shofar, we actually found in another place, and that was Matan Torah. So now, again, I am very, very frightened that I've completely confused you now, so I want to make sure that you're following me. What were the questions that we had raised till this point? We noticed right away from the beginning that Shemitah sounds a little bit like Shabbat. That's correct. What else do we notice? But we also notice there is this Omer aspect to it. We're going to come back to that. What else do we notice? We notice that it is very similar, the 50th, the Yovel, is very similar to Shavuot. What else did we notice or question? Why is Yovel, with the blowing of the shofar, which should be Rosh Hashanah, why is that on Dafka, specifically on Yom Kippur, that should have been on Rosh Hashanah? So those were essentially the questions, and in order to start trying to answer that, I said, well, notice that we have a shofar in another place, and that shofar was actually by Matan Torah. Now, what was I trying to say before? It's like normally we're used to, what we normally do is a comparison between two things. We take one, take the second, say, wow, look how similar they are, and then compare them and say, oh, now I learned a little from this into that. The only thing complex about what I'm doing now is I'm doing three-card Monte, right? You just got to follow me over here, otherwise you're not going to see it. What was the one thing? The one thing was Yovel. That's where we start. Where else do we find the Yovel word Well, we find it by Matan Torah. That itself should tell you something. That itself should tell you something, that Yovel is called Yovel, and Matan Torah used the word Yovel. That's significant. What else are we? What else did we notice along the way? We noticed of that the Shabbat Shabbaton aspect. Okay, we're going to come back to that. Counting 7 weeks and so on, 7 days, 49 days, 50th is a Shabbat Shabbaton. Over here also, the term Shabbat Shabbaton is also found by Yovel. So we have another linguistic connection. But what's the third thing? We had one and two. What was the third thing? The third thing was Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur is the Shabbat Shabbaton, but Yom Kippur is when you blow the shofar, at least over here, on the Yovel, and Yom Kippur is a Shabbat Shabbaton, blow the shofar, but there's one more thing which is missing to all of this, and then this will start making sense. And then I'm going to claim something, that the idea that Matan Torah took place on Shavuot is actually, I can't say it's black and white in the Torah, because it's not, but I'm going to try to show you how it was actually very, very strongly implied. But again, I'm using a little Torah Shebal Peh, but I want to read it back into the Chumash, and then you'll see exactly what I mean by this. Let's take a look again at another source. Well, first of all, notice on the Avodah Yom Kippur, which is source number 6. V'yomer Shemo Moshe Deber Aron Achicha V'al Yivo B'chol Leit El HaKodesh. You can't come into the inner sanctum at any time. The only way you go in is with a cloud, which is very interesting because a cloud covering is what happened by Mount Sinai. What's the connection between Yom Kippur and Mount Sinai? Give me a second. On this day, you are not allowed to eat or drink and engage in sexual relations, on and on. Again, that same phrase used. So Yom Kippur, as we see, is the Shabbat Shabbaton. It's also somehow connected, but let's now be a little bit clearer. There's a Mishnah over here in source number 7, Ta'anit, and I really don't want to read the whole Mishnah, but we'll see how far we get. And you know this Mishnah. And if you don't, then you'll feel completely inadequate, which is okay, because you should know this Mishnah. I know I'm a very bad teacher. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, lo hayu yom tov l'Yisroel k'chamisha asar ba'av u'k'yom ha'kippurim. The happiest days of the year were Tu B'Av and on Yom Kippur. And what are we told about both of those days? Shebahen, Benot, Yerushalayim, Yotzot, B'Kli Lavan, She'ulin, Shelavesh, Misha'en Lo. And now it goes into a little bit of a side point over there. Kol HaKinu Tunim Tevilah. Uvanot, Yerushalayim, Yotzot, V'Cholot, B'Kramim. They would go out dancing in the vineyards. Umahayu Omrot, what would they say? Bachur, Sanai Necho, Ra'eb. Young man, lift up your eyes. Don't be so shy and take a look. Ma'ato Barer Lach. What do you choose? Don't look for someone who's beautiful. So we're told, you know, later on in the Gemara that is what the ones who were not necessarily beautiful from good families would say. Don't look at beauty, look at good families. Why? Because it says, the Gemara also says that those who are beautiful would say, no, look at beauty. But the Gemara doesn't say what would happen if a girl was both beautiful and from a good family. Well, of course it doesn't say. They were probably all married already. Anyway, va'omer tnu la mipri yadeha, v'yalubish, and so on. V'cheinu omer tsena urena benot tzion b'melech shlomo ba'atara she'itra lo imo b'yom chatunato u'v'yom sipchat libo. And v'cheinu omer, and it similarly says, no, what are we referring to? Okay, yom chatunato, but what is it we're talking about? V'yom sipchat libo. B'yom chatunato zu matan Torah. So I'm going to say something which may not be obvious to you. And before I say, the Mishnah is very, very well known. But I want to tell you what the Mishnah means or what it implies. It implies that on the 15th day of Av is somehow connected to Binyan Beit HaMikdash. And it implies that Yom HaKippurim is the day of Matan Torah, Zu Matan Torah. Now, why am I saying that? Because there's V'cheinu Omer. Actually, if you look at Rashi, Ta'anit, Rashi right there, Ze Matan Torah, Yom HaKippurim, Shenitnu Bo Luchot HaAchronot, which means Yom Kippur is the day that the second Luchot were given. So now, what did Rashi just now tell me, which all of us should have known already? But maybe we were not thinking enough. Yom Kippur is the day that Moshe receives the second Luchot. According to our Mesorah, Moshe goes up the second, or maybe according to Rashi, the third time, on Rosh Chodesh Elul. By the way, what custom do we have from Rosh Chodesh Elul? To start blowing the shofar. The 40 days that Moshe is up there ends with God giving him the new Luchot. Rashi says that's on Yom Kippur. Why? Because he went up Rosh Chodesh Elul. 30 days of Elul, 10 days of Tishrei. Moshe comes down after 40 days with the new Luchot. So what day is Matan Torah? Yom Kippur. Or actually, using the biblical terminology, Yom HaKippurim is Yom Matan Torah. By the way, I go even further. Yom HaKippurim, reality, is Yom Kabbalat HaTorah. It's the day we receive, we accept the Torah. That's why we're forgiven in Yom Kippur. What does the forgiveness of Yom Kippur do? How does it work? It works when we say, I've messed up during the year, and now I accept upon myself the Torah. Which means in reality, Zman Matan Torateinu, I'm going to say it again with more emphasis, Zman Matan Torateinu is Chag HaShavuot, but Yom Kabbalat Torateinu is Yom HaKippurim. God gave us the first Luchot, but we messed up, and we're going to come back to that mess up momentarily. But the time that we actually received or accepted the Torah, as it were, is in reality on Yom HaKippurim. So now what have I pointed out? I've pointed out that Yom HaKippurim is actually Yom Matan Torah. Now again, remember my three cards over here that I was playing with? Chag HaShivuot, 7 weeks after leaving Egypt, 49 days, 50th day, more or less, is when we get the Torah at Har Sinai. That is the time we receive the Torah. So therefore, the counting of the 49 and so on, and getting up to the 50th, that's Matan Torah, that we understand. But when we went from that micro counting of 49 days to the macro of the 49 years, and then specifically the 50th, should be connected to Matan Torah. So that's what's really interesting. It is connected to Matan Torah, but it's not connected to Shavuot. It didn't say you blow the shofar on Chag HaShavuot, the 50th year. It connected it to the Yom Matan Torah, but the day that it worked. Not the day it didn't work, because the time that we actually accepted the Torah, and that's Yom Kippur. So I'm saying if you actually followed what I just now did, I don't know what to call this. I'm not that crazy to say it's pshat what I just now said. But there's certainly a remez that Matan Torah really is on Chag HaShavuot from the biblical sensitivity of understanding the combination of the blowing of the shofar, right? Why the shofar in Yom Kippur? Because we're fixing Matan Torah, which means that something went wrong with Matan Torah. Well, whoever said something went wrong? Well, of course something went wrong. We know something went wrong. And what was that little thing that went wrong? Well, 40 days later, we're back to the 40 days, but 40 days after the first, 40 days after Moshe goes up the first time, the Jews are unfortunately making an eagle, and that is not what they were supposed to be doing. So therefore, Matan Torah gets messed up, the Luchot get broken, and now Moshe is going to have to go up another time, and Moshe is going to bring down the Luchot specifically on Yom HaKippurim. So I'm saying, if you pay attention, again, now, this is not three-card Mahanti. This is, I'll convince myself soon enough that it's pshat, that Yom Kippur is the day we receive the Torah. By the way, the other thing which is really interesting, when we sin with the golden calf, what do we do? What does it say to do? Achlu v'shatu v'kamu l'tzachek. And Rashi there says, l'tzachek is gili arayot. What is it that you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippurim? What is the inoy nefesh? You can't eat and you can't drink and you can't engage in sexual relations, which means Yom Kippur is here in order to fix what was done by the golden calf. Now, why in the world am I connecting the golden calf with Yom Kippur? Well, that's the day that we get forgiven for the golden calf. But it's not. But now you realize Yom Kippur has two facets to it. One facet to it is that we get forgiven for what we've done. But the other facet is we receive the Torah. And I'm going to say that those two facets, Zishtaim Shehim Echad, it's really the same. The forgiveness is, of course, we finally receive the Torah, but without receiving the Torah, we couldn't possibly have forgiveness. So therefore, it's interesting that when we have this whole macro 49-50 count, 7 weeks or 7 years, and it gets to the 49th and then the 50th year, it's really interesting that we go to the way that it works and not to the one that didn't work. We go to Yom Kippur and we have the blowing of the shofar on Yom Kippur in the 50th year. And I think I just now actually explained and answered all the questions that I raised, which is really bad because I have not been speaking long enough to have answered all the questions. So I want to try to show a little bit more depth to all of this. But as I said, what I just now said stands on its own, that there is this aspect absolutely of this Shabbat Shabbaton, which again is used to describe Yovel, it's used to describe Shavuot, and it's used to describe, and that was my use because it's 7 times 7, and it's used to describe Yom Kippur. But now you realize why, because there's this whole other element which connects these three times or dates or aspects together. Okay, let's go back and look at the sources, because there's another level to what's going on here that I want to identify. The Gemara in Shabbat, and let me say a little bit about this Gemara first before we read it. The Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Lamed Gimel. First of all, the significance of Lamed Gimel is that, of course, we always learn that Gemara on Lag BaOmer. And that's because the Amud Bet over there is the whole story of Shimon bar Yochai. Whether the printers of the Vilna Shas had a sense of humor and they put this specifically on Daf Lamed Gimel, I don't know, but it gives rabbis something to say, which you realize is actually one of the most important things. So, but on the first side of the page there, Amud Aleph, there's something which I want to identify, and it associates sin with certain punishments or suffering. Now, I want to be very careful. First of all, in Judaism, which I understand based upon other Gemarot, not the one I'm about to read, and I'll explain to you why the one I'm about to read is going to be a little different. In my understanding of Judaism, we don't usually associate suffering with sin. And you're going to say, but of course we do. And if you can insist that of course we do, and you can bring me 5 different Gemarot that we do, I can bring you at least 4 that we don't, but we'll end up saying it's Machloka. But there's another Gemara that I want to introduce. There's a Gemara in Baba Batra towards the beginning. Anything in Baba Batra before page like 80 or so is towards the beginning. But this is like single digits. And the Gemara has a really interesting give and take between Rabbi Akiva and a Roman. The Roman says to Rabbi, there's like 3-4 pages that deal with Tztaka. And this is one of the Tztaka Gemaras, I think, from Daf Chet, Daf Yud, Yud Aleph. So this is there in the middle. And the Roman dignitary says to Rabbi Akiva, you know, because you Jews give tzedakah, you're going to end up going to hell. You're going to be punished by the wrath of God. And he says, I'll give you a parable to what this can be compared to. Imagine that the king got mad at one of his slaves and throws him away into the dungeon. And then somebody else sneaks into the dungeon and gives him some food and gives him some things. You're going against the will of God. God determines, God, according to you, runs the world. God decided this person should be a have-not. How dare you go and give him things? So Rabbi Akiva said, I'll give you a mashal amad davar domeh. But by the way, you understand that in the Havamina of the Roman, he's saying is that that suffering is associated with sin. So when somebody is suffering, I need to look at them and say, you are a sinner. Next time somebody knocks on your door and says, can I have tzedakah? You say, obviously, if you need tzedakah, you are a terrible sinner. Leave. I don't want to aid in a bed. I don't want God to be mad at me. Now, you all know everything I just now said is absurd, but that's what that's the position of the Roman. That's the halach according to the Roman dignitary. What does Rabbi Akiva say? I'll give you a mashal l'ma davar domeh. He goes, can you imagine that the king had 2 sons, and he got mad at one of his sons, and he punishes his son. And the other son feels a sense of brotherhood and goes out to help his son, help his brother who's suffering. Wouldn't their father be happy? Now you notice the difference in Rabbi Akiva and the Roman. The Roman created a relationship between, you know, it's actually real built into Roman society, but you know, you have the masters and the slaves, so God is the ultimate master and everyone else is slaves. But Rabbi Akiva says, no, God is our father in heaven, and God is our father, and other people are our brothers and sisters. And if our brothers and sisters need something, we're there to help our brothers and sisters. And isn't God going to be happy when we help our brothers and sisters? The Zohar says that when God wants to punish somebody, he says, hold it a second, let me just try something. And he sends him an angel dressed up as a poor person. Sometimes the poor person doesn't even know they're an angel. And he says, come, let me see. If they take care of this person, I'm going to take away their punishment. And if they don't, then I'll say, okay, they really did have this coming to them. So it's interesting. We don't associate sin and suffering. We don't say the person is suffering is obviously a sinner. We say a person is suffering created an opportunity for others to have a feeling of brotherhood, of fraternity, to reach out and to help and to say, listen, you're my brother, you're B'Tselem Elokim, you're a child of God, and God would be very happy if I take care of you. So I'm saying is that all of that would be a reason why I would not associate sin and suffering. So now I'll contradict everything that I just now said and say, let's take a look at the Gemara, but I'm going to explain why the Gemara sees things differently. But one more introduction before I see the Gemara. There are lots of rabbis, probably far more competent than I, that whenever something happens, they always know exactly why God did it. What's really interesting about a lot of these rabbis, it's really funny, but the thing that they, you know, wanted to point their finger at, they actually were pointing their finger at that before God did something, and now God proved that they're right. Oh, you see, this happened because of this. You can just go a microcosm of this, take a look at all the reasons people gave to explain what's going on right now. I mean, some people obviously, it's because women don't dress sneezily enough. So obviously, those are the rabbis who were fixated with sneeze. So therefore, now God gave them an opportunity to prove them right. Look at all the suffering because of this. Some people say Lashon Hara. Some people say because of Shabbos. Some people, and go on and on and on and on. And this is because God obviously works for these people. And therefore, he provides them with evidence of whatever happens to be their theory or their theory at the moment. Now, need I say I don't love this? Rav Lichtenstein did not love this either, and he once responded to one of these fellows with he says, you don't know what your donkey, right? Exactly, exact phrase by Bilam. You don't understand, you know, certain things. You're going to understand Dat Elyon. You understand what God really wants. You understand God's mind. God comes and told you this. I mean, what kind of arrogance is this? You don't understand how God runs the world. You think God is doing whatever it is that you particularly are fixated with? So now let's look at the Gemara with all of those introductions and see what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Ba'avon shfichut damim, Beit HaMikdash charev. The Gemara says, you know why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? Because of shfichut damim. U'shchina mistaleket Yisrael, and that caused the Shechina to leave Israel. Shenemar, by the way, notice the difference. It quoted a verse. V'lo tachnifu, v'lo tatamei et ha'aret, asher atem yoshvim ba, asher nishochem b'tocha. Ha'atem matmeim ota, einchem yoshvim ba, v'ein nishochem b'tocha. So let me pause. Because I actually would have brought a completely different verse. I would have brought the verse in the very beginning of the Torah, in Perek Tet, in Bereshit. It there says, Shofech Adam Damo B'Damo Yishofech Ki B'Tselem Elokim Asat Adam. The reason that you can't spill gum, Shvichut Damim, the same term over here, is because man is in the image of God. So if man is the image of God, when you've killed somebody, you've caused that image of God to somehow leave this particular person because the person is dead now, which means you spill blood and you cause the Shechina not to be here, which actually means the Shechina is within lots and lots and lots of people. That's part of the problem of Sinat Chinam generally, and that's the problem with Shvichat Damim specifically. But again, the Gemara over here actually brought a verse, so that's a little stronger than some of the people that just say whatever in their imagination. The Gemara continues and says, "Bavon gilui arayot v'avodah zarah v'hashmatat shmitin v'yovalot galut bala olam." So there was just now a real interesting shift, because once you start with shvichut damim, you know, any educated Jew knows what's coming. You start with shvichut damim, where do you end up with gilui arayot and avodah zarah? Because those three kind of go together. Right, so those things go together. So once the first one came, we're not shocked the other one came, the other two arrived. But Shmita and Yovel, that we weren't expecting. Galut bala olam umagalinota ubeinu achareihim v'yoshvim b'komam. We get chased away. Others come and settle in their place. Ki et kol tevota ela suan shea aretz batitzma aretz v'vkod avona aleha uktiv lo taki aretz etchem bimat B'tam'eichem otam. Uvavodah zarah, he brings the verses as well. V'ashmoti et miktoshechem. b'shmitin v'yovelod, as tirtzeh aret ha-chaptoteh. Kol yimei shema v'tem ba'aretz aivechem, k'tiv ki kol yimei ha-shama tishbot. Now, I read the verses quickly, and I read the verses quickly on purpose. And sometimes people quote verses, you know, missionaries on the street can quote verses, lahavdil. Quoting verses is not enough. You have to go and look at the context. You have to see, hold it, is that what the verse really meant? Is somebody pulling a fast one on us? Is there really some kind of a correlation between these various sins and exile? And as I said, the one which should surprise us the most is Shemitah. So let's take a look again now. We read two parshiot this week. One is Bahar, and the other is Bechukotai. If you look at source number 10, you're going to notice something. First of all, I want you to notice the number 7, which comes up more than it should. It's the Parashat Bechukotai begins, you know, you should follow my statutes and follow the laws and you should live your life this way and everything will be good. And then it says, ve'im ad eila, and then if you don't, this and this is going to happen to you. But if you keep on being bad, ve'im ad eila lo tishmuli, which means after I begin to punish you, you ignore, you know, what's happened, ve'asafti le'asaratchem, then I'm going to continue, sheva al chatotechem. I'm going to pay you back 7 times over, and that's an interesting number. And then it comes and it says, "V'lo titen artzachem et yivula," and the land's not going to give its produce. "V'etz artz lo titen yipriyo," and it's now. Do you recognize those words? So let me just go back a second because we didn't look at that carefully enough. But look what happens if you follow the laws of Shemitah and Yovel back in the first source, back in Perek Kafhei, where it talked about Shemitah and talked about Yovel. One of the things it says over here is, "Vasitim chokotai v'mishpatai tishmu vasitim otam v'yishavtim al ha'aretz levetach." You're going to live in this land. What does levetach means? With bitachon, in peace, and tranquility. "V'natata aretz pirya," and the land's going to give its fruit. "V'achaltem l'sova," and you're going to eat and be satiated. "V'yishavtim levetach aleha," and you're going to eat, you know, in peace, tranquility, and so on. Now you go over to the tochacha, to the rebuke, which is over here, and which we started to read, and you notice it says, and what's going to happen? That is the flip side of what we just now read in keeping Shemitah. Now, the other thing was 7 times over. That wasn't just one time. It'll say it again in Pasuk Kaf. Again, I'm going to pay you back 7 times over. It says it again in Pasuk Kaf. So you see the number 7 is coming again and again. And then it says, I will then destroy your cities. I'm going to destroy your temple. And all of this, in case you think, okay, 7, that's not good enough. Vashimoti aniyat haaretz, I'm going to cause the land to become desolate. Vishamamu ala oivechem yoshvimba, and then the enemies will come. Vetchem ezret bagayim, I'll plant you among the non-Jews. Varikoti etchem charev. Vaita aretzachem shemamar varechem yecharva, and everything's going to be destroyed. Az tirtza aretzat shabtoteha, and then the land will get to keep Shabbat. Kol yemei hashama, as long as it's desolate, but tem beretz aveichem, and you're going to be in the land of your enemy, az tishpat haaretz v'hirtza et sheptoteha. And then the land is going to get to keep its Shabbat properly. Kol yemei hashama, as long as there is desolation, destruction, tishpot, it'll rest. Et asher lo shavta b'shaptotechem b'shiftechem aleha, as payback for you not letting it rest in the way that I commanded you, that you did not keep the sabbatical year properly. So what I'm pointing out is that this Gemara was actually a little bit better than I implied before. This Gemara is actually, it's what the words of the Torah say. Well, at least so far we saw with the Shemitah. It says you don't keep Shemitah going to Galut. Now, this is important for us to understand something else. We're getting close, by the way, those of you who don't know, we're getting close to the sabbatical year again. It's not immediate, but we're getting closer. And we're closer to it than we were from the last one. I think it's another 2 years is the sabbatical year. And it's not a simple law. And it's not a simple thing. And it's not a simple law to live with. I will not go into too much detail now, but I am absolutely an advocate of the Heter Mechira. But there were those who felt that coming to the land, you need to keep the laws of Shemitah perfectly, and all the mitzvot of Tulir Ba'aretz, all the agricultural laws, perfectly. Otherwise, look what it says in the Torah, you're going to be kicked out. Now, that's very nice, except for one really important thing. Are the Shemitah laws right now Torah level or not Torah level? And maybe even you know, think it doesn't make a difference, but you still need a solution, which is going to be a good solution, which is going to deal with, you know, a population which God has blessed us with in this land. It's no longer the old yeshuv, which was anyway living off of a couple of, you know, donations from people from Chutz La'aretz. We have millions of mouths to feed, and this is a complex situation. And if Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is Drabanan, then it gives us different possibilities. But I understand those who, when they came back, said, if you're going to live here, I was just reading the other day something from a grandson of the Kutzker Rebbe, who ironically was the Kutzker Rebbe, and he was actually a Zionist. Anybody who's interesting, I will send you a 66-page PDF of a book that he wrote and never published, although a number of people wrote to him. He corresponded about it because he sent it to people to look at. He never published it, and it's a Zionist manifesto, which is fascinating for a chassid from where he was coming from and a Rebbe where he's coming from. And it was absolutely a Zionist manifesto. And he says a number of things which are fascinating. But the place that he holds off, he says, if you're not going to keep Shemitah properly, and he knows about that to Mechira, he thinks it's terrible. If you're not going to keep Shemitah properly, don't go to Israel. Better off to stay in Chutz La'aretz. And I'm saying it is a Zionist manifesto. He also says that before you go to Israel, you know that there's an Arizal in the morning when you get up, and it says, the Magen Avraham quotes it, and says that you should say, I accept upon myself the mitzvah haftarach kamocha. He says, if you can't daven unless you accept that you're going to love all other Jews, he says that before you come to live to Israel, you have to accept upon yourself the mitzvah haftarach kamocha, and you have to take it upon yourself that you're not going to fight with other Jews. Otherwise, the temple was destroyed because of Sinat Chinam. And if you're not willing to stop the vicious cycle of Sinat Chinam, you have no right to live in Israel. So it's very interesting because he actually looks about Shemitah, not keeping Shemitah, the Torah says, is going to cause exile. So you have to keep Shemitah properly. But Sinat Chinam destroyed the exile. So you have to accept upon, and by the way, he says you have to accept upon yourself that you're going to keep Shemitah in the proper way. And he says you should make a vow about it before you go there. Make a neder, make a shvuah, that you and your family will keep Shemitah properly. But he also says that you have to accept upon yourself that you are going to love other Jews as yourself, even if they are completely different from you. Otherwise, you have no moral right to be allowed to return to live in Israel. So again, I thought it's fascinating. Anybody who wants a copy of this, I'll be happy to send you the Sefer. And I readily admit I found it earlier in the week, and I have not learned through the whole thing yet. I've looked at little things in it, and of course, I started at the end and went backwards. I want to see how the book ended. What can I do? And anybody interested, as I said, I'm very happy to send the document. Let me go back now, and again, I want to try to pull some of this together to see, I think, what else is going on. Back in, let's see exactly where to begin. What we're told over here is that what's so important is Shemitah, but I think that Shemitah actually fits into another category, which was actually the first category that I said to you right away when I started. And that was, it sounds like Shabbat. And the reason that it sounds like Shabbat is that Shemitah is a type of a Shabbat. Now, there was a phrase that was used a number of times, and I'm not sure how much we've paid attention to it. I think the first time it's used is in Source 11, Perek Lamed Aleph. V'yomer Shem Moshe Lemor, v'ata daber b'nei Yisrael Lemor, ach et shabtotai tishmoru. And of course, what's interesting is why it's plural, shabtotai tishmoru. Why Shabtotai in this particular context? What I will point out is that immediately after it says keep Shabbat at Shabtotai or different types of Shabbatot, immediately afterwards, this is the end of Lamed Aleph, immediately afterwards in the beginning of Lamed Bet, what do we find? We find the Cheta Egel, that we find idolatry, and we find Egel Masecha, V'yomor Eilach Yisrael, we find sin. Now, the reason I suspect that I'm onto something is take a look at Source number 13, Perek Yudtet, Parshat Kedoshim, Ishimova Vivtirov et Shabtotai Tishmaru. Again, Shabtotai, what's immediately afterwards? Al Tifnu Elilim. Vilim Esecha Lo Tasu. The other thing which is interesting over here is a little bit later. So, okay, to make it clear, you have Shabbat and then Avodah Zarah. Shabbat, and by the way, that was twice already, or Shabbatot and Avodah Zarah. And what do you have in Kaftet? Al techalel et bitcha lehaznota velo tizna ha'aret velo ha'aret zima. And you have this attack against Gilei Arayot, and then how does it end up? Et shabta tai tishmaru u'mikdashi tirao. Which now becomes a lot more interesting, because, again, especially the mikdashai, it's the shabta tai, which I'm going to come back to in the plural, but it's mikdashai, mikdashi as well. By not keeping these laws, you're going to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. And what is the verse immediately afterwards? Al tifnu al vot vel yedonim, which goes back to types of occult. In source number 2, which is in Bechukotai, lo tasu lachem elilim u'peso matzeva lo takimu lachem, again, against the Avodah Zarah. And what does it say right afterwards? Et shabta tai tishmor mikdashai tirao ani Hashem. And that's the end of Parshat Bahar, and right then it starts Parshat Bechukotai. And then it goes into, again, this whole idea of not keeping Shemitah properly. So the Shabto Tai in this case, in this week's parsha, where it was preceded by Bahar and the whole introduction of Shemitah and Yovel, and then it's followed by the Tochacha, which focuses on the not keeping of Shemitah. This Shabto Tai Tishmo is interesting, but once again, it is placed right next to Avodah Zarah. So what is it that I am suggesting? That every time it speaks of Shabbatotai, and I want to say it again, we have multiple types of Shabbatot. We have the seventh day, all the holidays to a certain extent are also a Shabbat. It's a day of cessation of labor. But the ultimate cessation of labor is going to be Shemitah, which is going to take a whole year. So now the question is, to what extent do we connect Shabbat and Shemitah, which I told you, that's where we started today. That was the tzlil that I started with, the sound, the tune that we started with. 6 days you work, seventh day you rest, 6 years you work, seventh day you rest. But there's another element which I think should connect it, and that maybe is also ultimately going to be the counter towards the Avodah Zarah that we keep finding right next to this every single time it introduces this idea. When it discussed the Shemitah, there was a very obvious problem which was introduced. I read before source 1, Perek Kafei, Pasuk Yuted, which sounded very much like the flip side of what we were going to read about by the Toch of Anatana, Aretz Perya, and so on. The Kitomru, and when you say, Manochal B'Shana Shvi'it, what are we going to eat on the seventh day? Hin lo nizra v'lo nesofet tvo'atenu, because we didn't work. And God says, "V'tziveti et birchati lachem b'shana hashishit." I'm going to cause a blessing on the sixth year. V'asat v'ad l'shalosh hashanim, and then it goes on to say, "And you're going to eat the older food. You're going to have enough food to last." Now, this is a real concern, and it was a real concern then, and it's a real concern, you know, going through modern times as well. I mean, how many people were there, new immigrants who came to America, who felt they had to work on Shabbat? Because what am I going to eat if I don't work on the seventh day? I can't hold down a job if I don't eat on the seventh day. Which means this idea of the sabbatical year and then saying, but hold up, what am I going to eat? Is actually, I'm going to say it again now, it's actually a macrocosm of Shabbat, because a lot of people, especially in antiquity, you work and then you have what to eat that day. What happens on that day that you don't work? What are you going to eat on that day? Again, if a person is living hand to mouth, they don't work one day, they're not going to eat that day. That's how it works. So it's interesting, because arguably the first time that Shabbat is introduced to the Jewish people, I think we have a very similar element. So let's take a look at source number 6. Sorry, absolutely not 6. Let's take a look at source number 15. This is when the mun is introduced. When the mun is introduced, so I want you to notice a couple of elements here. The first thing, which I'm not going to let you ignore, v'yiba yom ha-shishi laktu lechem ishna shnei ha-omer le'echad. This is the first time that the word Omer is used. So again, I told you, I keep working with this more complex comparison of threes instead of just twos. Omer is used here, and Omer is used by the Omer, obviously. The Omer is 7 times 7, 49. Here we have an Omer, which is interesting. What does it then say? V'yomer le'em hu asher diber Hashem Shabbaton Shabbat. By the way, instead of Shabbat Shabbaton, Shabbaton Shabbat Kodesh LaHashem. And again, afterwards, Ki Shabbat Hayom LaHashem. So over here, the Mun actually teaches this element of trust, which means, okay, let me explain this in oh, are you seeing this? I'm sorry, you're not seeing that, are you? Okay, I'll get back to, I'll show you the source in a second. The Mun teaches trust more than anything else. Why does Mun teach trust? Because you need to lift your heads heavenward and wait for the bread to fall from heaven. You can't make a mistake. Those of you who've heard me teach many times know that I've said this many, many times. I don't understand the Cheda Egel. I don't understand the Cheda Meraglim. I don't understand the Cheda Mitonin. I don't understand any of the sins in the desert, because what did they eat that morning? They went, they collected the Mun, which God gave them, and they made a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokim Melech Haolam, Motzi Lechem Min HaShamayim, and then they go and they sin. Okay, God is not among us. What do you mean God is not among you? God fed you this morning. I mean, maybe I'm making fun of them, but we should make fun of ourselves. Maybe any of us who ever have some kind of a crisis in faith, look at your lives. God does take it. I know that sometimes things are difficult. I know that sometimes we have reason to complain. It's okay to complain. But on the other hand, look at all the things that God gave us. So therefore, basic faith, should we call this bread-based faith? I know there's lots of religions. Ours is bread-based faith. Bread-based faith, right? Bread-based faith is bread comes from heaven. We lift up and we say, thank you, God. And by the way, but what else do we learn? We learn the Shabbat. But what is Shabbat ultimately going to tell you? Oh, you're not going to work on the seventh day. Ain't going to work on Saturday. Now, if you're not going to work on Shabbat, what's going to end up happening? You're going to have nothing to eat. Well, God says, I'm going to take care of you. You're going to have what to eat. In the desert, they got a double portion on Friday. Now, okay, we have to make sure that we collect our double portions. Or if you're still locked in your homes, you got to make sure your children or grandchildren bring you your double portions before Shabbat to make sure that you have what it is that you need. But Shabbat teaches us faith. Now, what is Shabbat? I'm sorry to say this on the most basic level. It's you shouldn't plant and you shouldn't plow. And it's very, shall we say, oriented in terms of agriculture, or very agriculture oriented, because that was the lives that they lived. And that's what, and I'm not going to say all the malachot, but a good deal of the malachot are based upon this agriculture. And that's, of course, that the aspect of Shemitah, which is connected to Shabbat, the part which is agricultural based. And that's why it sounded so similar. The words sounded similar because they are the same words. Because on Shabbat, we can't do these things. We can't plant them. We can't plow. We can't do these things in harvest. And we can't do these things on Shemitah. And of course, that's going to be the connection. The lives that the Jews lived was agricultural lives. The Gemara in Shabbat, Lamed Aleph, Amid Aleph, which is source 16, says, Amar Resh Lakish, Ma'i Dichtev, Vaya Emunat, Itecha Chosen, Yishuot, Chachma, Vedat. Emuna, or Emunat, faith, Zeh Seder Zra'im. The whole concept of agriculture is based upon faith. You can read the rest of the Gemara, what the other Sdarim relate to, but Zra'im are based upon faith. The farmer knows he has a senior partner. The senior partner is God. God has to make sure that everything that we do is going to come literally to fruition. The faith of the farmer is, I can take something dead and put it into the ground and it will come back to life. You realize that's miraculous. You realize that that's miraculous. That's Tchiyat HaMetim. That's total emunah. You put something in the ground and it returns and it comes back to life. That is amazing. But that's what the farmer experiences all the time. Now look how God then pushes the farmer a little bit more. Shabbat's going to come around. You're not going to work on Shabbat. But what am I going to eat? Well, unless that goes back to the desert. What do we learn in the desert when Shabbat is introduced? Don't worry. God always gives us a double portion before Shabbat. That's not just a desert experience, and that's the desert, and that's the Omer, and so on. So what happens when the agricultural year begins? We bring the Omer. We count the 49, we get to the 50, and that is all agricultural based. The Shemitah is the macrocosm of that 49 and 50, of the 7 weeks, the 7 years, it's the macrocosm of it. But you get to the Shemitah year, what are the people going to ask? Well, what are we going to eat? So what's the answer? It's faith. But what was so interesting is that every time that we had this idea, you know, Shabtotai, which is Shabbat and Shemitah, every time we have this being introduced, what happens? Idolatry is right next to it. It's right there next to it. which means, do you have faith? Do you believe in God? Do you have emunah or not? And you're going to say, hold it, why is it so strong? Well, that's essentially what the choices are over here. The agricultural society was supposed to give the farmer faith. And that's what the whole agricultural enterprise was. I can leave the side of my field for somebody who's poor. I can take Truma and Ma'aser and I can give it to somebody else. And there are the needy who's going to come and get the sheaves that fell, and so on and so forth. The very laws were built to create a kind society which has faith that God provides. I'm going to work, God's going to give me what I need, and I'm going to have an abundance, and I can give it to others. And I don't have to work on Shabbat, and I'll have enough. And I don't have to work during the sabbatical year, and God is going to take care of me. But what I'm trying to point out is that this is a macrocosm of the other, which means the Shabbat, and then the Sheva Shabbatot, Mimachrata Shabbat, with all of the complexity that that verse gave in terms of antiquity, and you know what I'm referring to, it is a Machrata Shabbat. It's a Machrata Shabbat because the Shabbat is a time of faith. The Jews who have faith are the ones who don't work on Shabbat. And the Jews who didn't have that much faith said, but what can I do? I need to work on Shabbat. And we're not judging them, but we understand that there was something which was missing. Because if you had more faith, then you know that that's what you can't do. You can't. You can't. God says, don't worry. And that's why the very introduction of Shabbat is introduced, again, with bread, but bread from heaven. Because realize this, all the bread comes from heaven. Everything comes from heaven. Even when we take something dead and put it into the ground, it comes back to life because of heaven. The idea of Shemitah is that God is our senior partner, and I can go a whole year, and I'm not going to plant, I'm not going to plow, I'm not going to work, and somehow everything is going to be there. When the Jews didn't have enough faith, they sort of lost count, and they lost track, and where's Moshe? And then they turned to idolatry, and they turned to a golden calf. They turned to idolatry. And instead, what we need is more faith. So what ends up happening is we find the parallel to those 40 days becomes the new 40 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Yom Kippur. Instead of the 7 weeks between Pesach and Shavuot, we now have the 7 years, the 49 years, and the 50th year. That 50th year really takes the place of Shavuot. But it takes the place of Shavuot in a most interesting way, because it takes the place of Shavuot in its perfect sense, which ends up becoming manifest only on Yom Kippur. Because it's on Yom Kippur that we accepted the Torah. It's on Yom Kippur that we accepted upon ourselves the rules. God was willing to give it to us, Zman Matan Torateinu, on Shavuot, but we accepted it properly on Yom Kippur. And therefore, when it comes to the 50th year, a time, by the way, according to some, there's a big machloket, whether you have two Shemitot in a row or not, and that would seem to be the easy way of reading it, that means that you're really not going to work for a while, but we have faith. We get to the 50th year, specifically on Yom Kippur, we blow the shofar, and that is the same shofar that was blown by Matan Torah, and everything returns back to its natural state. Not just the land reverts back to its owner, but everything returns back to its natural state because it's Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, everything returns back to its natural state. On Yom Kippur, we get forgiven, we get cleansed, we're forgiven from the ultimate sin, from the sin of the golden calf. But the way to do this is to have emunah, is to have faith, and to believe in God, and understand that God is our partner. And we don't have to wait for the 50th year to do this. We do this on a weekly basis. And that's what we learned the very first time, the very first Omer that was introduced, right back there in the desert, when the bread came down from heaven, and we understood, we'll take double on Friday, because we're not taking any on Shabbat, because God provides for us, and God gives us what we need, and He even gives us more than we need, because we're going to need it a little bit later on. And all that we need to do, as I said, is to have faith, because God is actually our partner. But part of having faith as well is accepting upon ourselves the Torah, accepting upon ourselves that God gives us Torah. And now you realize that Shavuot is the Yovel, is Yom Kippur, and maybe, I don't know, I'll throw Purim in there if you want as well, but then you'll tell me it's Purim Torah. But ultimately, I hope that you understand that as we move to the end of Vayikra, maybe it's a surprise ending, maybe we weren't looking for this, maybe we didn't understand this, is that we've moved away from the Mishkan because God says you need to protect the Beit HaMikdash. Et shabtotai tishmaru ve'et mikdashi tirau. You're going to need to guard my mikdash. And the way that you do it is by keeping my Shabbat. Because ultimately, if we don't have enough faith to keep Shabbat and to keep Shemitah and to keep Yovel and so on, if we don't have enough faith, then how can we possibly have a Beit HaMikdash? That these things go together. And therefore, Shemitah is thrown in together as pshat, and that you can't argue with, as one of the sins which brings galut, which brings destruction of the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash and so on. Which means is that this is a basic element of faith, and if we don't have that faith, how can we possibly have a Beit HaMikdash? And as I said, I won't go so far as the grandson of the Kutzker Rebbe to say that if you're not willing to accept Shemitah with every single Chumrah, don't come here. I understand his point. I do understand his point. But I like his other point a little bit better. You're going to come and live here. Before you come, accept upon yourself that I will love all Jews as myself, and I will treat all Jews with love, and I will do everything that I can to bring about a tikkun of the sins that brought about the destruction of the temple. And as I said, we live in this reality. And I thought, you know, what a greater reality than a chassid being raised in a non-Zionist world, waking up one day and saying, wow, we need to go back home. But in order to go back home, we need to make sure that we follow the rules to be able to stay home. What those rules and how they work, obviously there's a lot of finesse and a lot of nuance. But God willing, we should all be zoche to live in the land of Israel, to flourish in the land of Israel. And as we understand, one of the key elements of that now is having the emunah, the basic emunah, the simple emunah, the faith that God really is constantly with us and our senior partner. May everybody stay healthy. Have a Shabbat Shalom. If there are questions, I am certainly willing. You can open up your mics and ask what you wish to.